Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Trish reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, July 21st. From the front page. Oil. Chevron to acquire Noble Energy in $13 billion deal. Transaction's value includes $5 billion in stock and debt. By Paul Takahashi, Houston Chronicle. Chevron plans to acquire Noble Energy in a $13 billion deal, the first major consolidation since oil markets crashed and left struggling companies vulnerable to takeover. The California energy major on Monday said it will purchase the Houston independent oil and gas producer in an all-stock deal valued at $5 billion or $10.38 per share. The total value of the transaction expected to close later this year is $13 billion, including debt. Our strong balance sheet and financial discipline gives us the flexibility to be a buyer of quality assets during these challenging times, said Chevron CEO Michael Wirth in a statement. This is a cost-effective opportunity for Chevron to acquire additional proved resources and reserves. Noble Energy's multi-asset high-quality portfolio will enhance geographic diversity, increase capital flexibility, and improve our ability to generate strong cash flow. One recent oil bust, fueled by a sharp drop in petroleum demand caused by the coronavirus pandemic amid a glut of cheap crude, is expected to usher in another wave of consolidations in the energy industry, which has struggled to attract Wall Street capital after years of lackluster financial performance. The bust will leave the industry smaller, swallowing up smaller companies through acquisitions and bankruptcies, and making the strongest companies even stronger. Chevron had been eyeing a major acquisition in recent years. It bid $50 billion last year for the Woodlands-based Anadarko Petroleum, but was outbid by Houston independent Occidental Petroleum. Chevron has taken a cautious and conservative outlook towards mergers and acquisitions and its general operations and balance sheet, reflected last year when it chose not to top Occidental's bid for Anadarko, said Andrew Dittmar, senior mergers and acquisitions analyst at energy research firm Inveris. That has been a major boon for the company facing the severe downturn in the first half of 2020 and now allows them to capitalize on available opportunities. Given their strength, Chevron has been near the top of just about everyone's list of potential 2020 buyers. Noble Energy's assets will bolster Chevron's portfolio in the DJ Basin of North Dakota, the Permian Basin of West Texas, and the Eagle Ford of South Texas. Noble had significantly expanded its position in the Permian's southern Delaware Basin with the January 2017 acquisition of Midland-based Clayton Williams Energy for $2.7 billion. The purchase price amounted to approximately $32,000 per core southern Delaware acre. That amount brought Noble Clayton Williams Energy 71,000 net acres in Reeves and Ward counties, which were adjacent to the 47,200 net acres Noble already owned. It was preceded by Noble's purchase of drilling rights on 7,200 acres in the Delaware for $300 million. The deal also will extend the energy major's operations into Israel and West Africa. Much of Noble's upstream value comes from its positions in Israel and Cyprus. Jean-Baptiste Bussard, an upstream analyst with energy research firm Wood Mackenzie, said, "Israel will provide Chevron with a new core international geography that will rebalance the portfolio toward gas and provide a springboard to capture further upside potential in the region." The acquisition also will boost Chevron's proved oil and gas reserves by about 18% and is expected to save $300 million in operating costs 1 year after closing. Noble Energy produced 18.6 million barrels of crude oil and 46.7 cubic feet of natural gas in 2019. It filed for 76 drilling permits last year, ranking number 32 among U.S. energy producers. Chevron produced 34.8 million barrels of crude oil and 177.1 billion cubic feet of natural gas in 2019. It filed for 222 drilling permits last year, ranking number 7 among U.S. energy producers. The deal has been unanimously approved by the board of directors for both companies and is expected to close in the fourth quarter of this year, pending approval by Noble Energy shareholders and regulatory officials. The $5 billion purchase price represents a 12% premium over the 10-day average on Noble's closing stock price as of July 17th. Following the closing, Noble Energy shareholders will own about 3% of the combined company. Sergio Chapa and Reporter Telegram oil editor Mella McEwen contributed to this report. Planning and zoning lets Green Acres revival move forward. Commissioners also approve alcohol permits for three new restaurants by Mella McEwen, M-M-C-E-W-E-N at MRT.com. Plans to redevelop and expand the Green Acres miniature golf course into an entertainment area moved forward Monday when Planning and Zoning Commissioners approved a zone change. The commissioners unanimously approved a request by Newton Engineering on behalf of the owners of Green Acres for a zone change from PD, Planned Development District, for a transition district to amended PD, Planned Development District, for a transition district. The applicant submitted the request to adopt a site plan for two lots. The eastern lot will be used as a miniature golf course, while the western lot will have various uses, including a 3,000-square-foot arcade, a 750-square-foot golf building, and a splash pad just north of those buildings. Future plans include an outdoor amphitheater at the north end of the western lot and five shade structures for picnic areas along the western boundary. Also on Monday, commissioners voted to allow plans for three restaurants. La Bonita LLC's request for a specific use designation with term for the sale of all alcoholic beverages for an on-premises consumption in a restaurant was approved by a vote of 5-1. The restaurant Macarena will open at 4411 West Illinois, the site of the former Casa Lopez. Like its predecessor, the restaurant will have two dining areas and a bar at the back of the building. Of the 6,811 total square footage, 4,193 feet will be dedicated to the sale of alcoholic beverages. Hours will be 6 a.m. to 10 p.m., Monday through Thursday, 6 to 11 on Friday and Saturday, and 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Sunday. Alcohol would be served from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. Amy Valenzuela's similar request for a specific use designation with terms for the sale of all alcoholic beverages for on-premises consumption in a restaurant was unanimously approved. She plans to open La Jaba in the former Smiling Moose Deli location at 3322 North Loop 250 West, with hours from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Friday and 8 to 10 Saturday and Sunday, with alcohol served from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Saturday and noon to 10 p.m. on Sunday. Consumption would be limited to a 1,303-square-foot portion of the restaurant, which includes the dining area. The third request for the designation to sell alcohol was submitted by Zwon Yu for the Korean Opa restaurant in San Miguel Square at 3303 North Midkiff. Hours including alcohol service would be from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., Monday through Sunday. Sale and consumption would be limited to 940 square feet of the 1,700 square foot restaurant, including the dining area. The request was unanimously approved. Good luck to those of you starting a new restaurant at this time, said Josh Sparks, commission chair, Commissioners also unanimously approved Zachary Davis's request for a specific use designation without term for the sale and service of automobiles or other motorized vehicles on two lots at 2203 West Florida Avenue. The property, currently vacant, has a 2,000 square foot building, half of which is being used for storage. Davis proposed plans would have cars for sale within a fenced area along South Garfield Street with parking on West Florida Avenue within the fenced area. Hours would be 11 to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Commissioners also approved a request by Vicente Carrasco for a zone change from AE, Agricultural Estate, and PD, Planned District, for an industrial district to SF1, Single Family Dwelling District, on a lot at 1205 Arapaho Road in order to build a home. County. Fire marshals to seek burn ban by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstNP.com. It's dry outside. That's what the metrics show, including the one county emergency personnel look at to help make important decisions. Midland County Fire Chief Justin Bunch said Monday that the Keach-Byram Drought Index, which was designed specifically for fire potential assessment, shows conditions are severe enough to warrant a burn ban. Bunch told the Reporter-Telegram that the average KBDI index score in Midland County was 609. A score between 600 and 800 is often associated with more severe drought and increased wildfire occurrence, according to the Texas A&M Forest Service, which posts conditions statewide. Intense, deep-burning fires with significant downwind spotting can be expected. Live fuels can also be expected to burn actively at these levels. Bunch said a score of 575 typically is the rating that would create the need for a burn ban, which a county judge or county commissioner's court can put into place prohibiting or restricting outdoor burning for public safety. Bunch said he will recommend at the commissioner's court meeting on Monday that Midland join the numerous counties across the Permian Basin that have bans in place. As of Monday, that list includes Ector, Martin, Howard, Glasscock, Upton, Crane, Reagan, Winkler, Ward, Reeves, Jeff Davis, and Brewster. A burn ban, once enacted, can last up to 90 days, Bunch said. Continuous rain isn't something that has happened at Midland International Airport. The National Weather Service reports the year started with plenty of moisture, but by March 18th, there was 5.25 inches of rain, which was 3.69 inches above average. Since that day, there has been 0.55 inch of rain, of an inch of rain measured. The normal rainfall from mid-March through mid-July is 5.37 inches. With the lack of rain, the hot temperatures, and the low humidity, it has made the KBDI number go up. The U.S. Drought Monitor shows this area of West Texas is experiencing some type of dry or drought conditions, from abnormally dry to moderate drought to severe drought. The monthly outlook for July calls for drought conditions to continue or to develop. He said it has been within the last 2 weeks that more counties have experienced the drier conditions. This time of year, we reach our peak fire danger, said Bunch, former officer with the Midland Police Department. Keach-Byram Drought Index. John L. Keach and George Byram designed a drought index specifically for fire potential assessment. It is a number representing the net effect of evapotranspiration and precipitation in producing cumulative moisture deficiency in deep duff and upper soil layers. It is a continuous index relating to the flammability of organic material in the ground. The KBDI attempts to measure the amount of precipitation necessary to return the soil to full field capacity. It is a closed system ranging from 0 to 800 units and represents a moisture regime from 0 to 8 inches of water through the soil. At 8 inches of water, the KBDI assumes a saturation. Zero is the point of no moisture deficiency, and 800 is the maximum drought that is possible. At any point along the scale, the index number indicates the amount of net rainfall. That is KBDI equaling 400 to 600, typical of late summer and early fall. Lower litter and duff layers contribute to fire intensity and will burn actively. A KBDI equal to 600 to 800, often associated with more severe drought, with increased wildfire occurrence. Intense, deep burning fires with significant downwind spotting can be expected. Live fuels can also be expected to burn actively at these levels. Index ratings. Winkler, 623. Ward, 618. Upton, 614. Reeves, 611. Midland, 609. Brewster, 602. Crane, 601. Andrews, 593. Loving, 581. Ector, 562. Glasscock, 542. Howard, 508. And Scurry at 505. MPD, MCSO patrol units to sport new looks by Mercedes Cordero, MCORDERO at HurstNP.com. Midlanders will soon notice a change on the Midland Police Department and Midland County Sheriff's Office vehicles. MPD and MCSO shared photos on their Facebook pages of the new look the patrol units will be sporting. Midland police officers' vehicles will be updated and changed from all white with a blue stripe across the side to black and white with the department's badge logo on the driver and passenger doors. The updated vehicle will be more identifiable as a police car and more cost-effective. These patrol units will feature four stars on the side, honoring the four officers who have died in the line of duty. MCSO patrol units will stay silver, but will have a yellow and blue stripe design across the side of the unit that features the redesigned shoulder patch that will incorporate the state of Texas along with an oil derrick and a pump jack. MPD's fleet transition will be completed as old vehicles are taken out of service and replaced with new units with updated graphics. According to their Facebook post, MCSO didn't state when the new patrol units would be updated. Five residents and five employees at Manor Park facility test positive from staff reports. Five residents and five employees of Helen Greathouse Manor assisted living at Manor Park tested positive for coronavirus on Sunday after rapid testing was conducted for residents and staff, according to a press release from the retirement community. The residents are isolating in the COVID-19 area at Manor Park. Three of them are asymptomatic, according to the release. The employees are isolating at home and won't return to work until they are cleared to do so. Employees and residents are screened daily for COVID-19 symptoms, according to the release. Because of HIPAA regulations, specific information will not be released about residents or employees. Since the pandemic started, 13 Manor Park residents have tested positive for COVID-19, according to an email from Stephen Nelson, the chief healthcare officer. Three residents have recovered and seven remain in the COVID-19 isolation area, and one resident is isolating at home and two residents have died. During the same time period, 23 employees have tested for COVID-19 and 13 have recovered and returned to work. Clinics offering coronavirus test. Midland Memorial Hospital, call 68nursemidlandhealth.org. There is a mobile testing center at West Campus for COVID-19. You must call for an appointment. Antibody testing at West Campus or Main Campus Direct Access. Call 68NURSE or 221-1111. There is a cash price for antibody testing of $50. Signature Care, 699-2601, ercare24.com/Midland. There's a cash price for COVID-19 nasal swab PCR test. Visit plus test is $175. Cash price for both COVID-19 and the PCR and the antibody is $300. If patients are insured, they will need to copay and the rest will be billed. The copay is waived for first responders. West Tex Urgent Care at 3401 Greenbrier Drive, 201-1403, phone, westtexurgentcare.com. Cash price for virtual visit for COVID-19 is $75. cash price for virtual visit for COVID-19, $75, but the cash price for nasal swab PCR test is $70. The cash price for COVID-19 antibody test is $50. All COVID-19 testing must begin with a virtual visit. Steward Medical Group, COVID-19 testing, swab test by appointment only. Complete Care Midland at 1701 North Loop 250 West Midland Drive. Phone 522-5033. MCHORMC, see hospitalization number stabilize by J.C. Lewis, jacy.lewis@hurstnp.com. The Medical Center Health System and Odessa Regional Medical Center saw coronavirus hospitalization stabilize over the weekend. Medical Center Hospital was treating 41 patients on Friday, and on Monday there were 36 coronavirus patients. Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons said the hospital is receiving tests faster than a few weeks ago. MCH is working with clinical pathology laboratories to continue to make the process faster. The hospital is treating one patient from Permian Basin Community Center, five patients from Sienna Nursing and Rehabilitation, four patients from Andrews, and two patients from Fort Stockton, and one patient from Stanton. MCH CEO and President Russell Tippin said Andrews and Fort Stockton have had upticks in positive cases, and staff has been watching the two cities for possible admissions. ORMC CEO and President Stacy Brown said the hospital is treating 16 patients, two more than on Friday. Nine of those patients are currently on ventilators, and the hospital had one death over the weekend. The patient who died was from Ector County. She said that admissions have stabilized and patients on ventilators have remained the same over the past couple of weeks. The new Chick-fil-A location on Faudry Road donated 75 free meals for a year to MCHS, according to a press release. The 75 meals were divided among employees in the COVID units, respiratory unit, housekeeping, and engineering. The campaign is part of Chick-fil-A's celebration of a new Faudry location scheduled to open this week. The company normally gives 100 free meals for a year to the first 100 customers during a grand opening. However, to promote social distancing and to thank healthcare workers, the location is donating 75 of the free meals for a year to the hospital. Coronavirus stats in Ector County, 1,028 active cases, 33 deaths, 1,342 people recovered, 2,403 total cases, with 1,643 confirmed and 760 probable. 12.40% positivity rate, 10,187 negative results, and 762 pending results. 20 to 29-year-olds lead with the most cases per age group at 648. City, 135 cases confirmed over three-day span. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at H-E-A-R-S-T-N-P.com. The average daily number of confirmed coronavirus cases this month topped 41 after another 135 cases were reported on Monday. The Midland Health Department reported that the total number of cases during the pandemic is 1,522 and that 821 of those have come during the month of June. Monday marked the first time that more cases have taken place in July compared to the other months combined. The 135 cases also marked the most cases during a three-day span. Only July 6th, the health department reported 155 cases, but that covered the number of cases over 4 days because of the holiday. While the number of recoveries jumped from 493 to 578 over the weekend, the health department reported there are 916 active cases and 28 people in the hospital. 28 people have died since the pandemic began. The week could be telling in terms of what direction the coronavirus cases are heading. It has been 2 weeks since the July 4th holiday and since the governor put a mask mandate into place. It was July 9th when Mayor Patrick Peyton called for Midlanders to serve one another by wearing their mask while out in public. Total cases reported June 22nd, 95. June 29th, 88. July 6th, 155. reported July 13th, 90, and reported July 20th, 135. Cases Monday, 135. Total cases, 1,522. Total test, 8,777. Patient status, home isolation on Monday, 836. Recovered, 578. Deaths, 28. Hospital, 28. Under investigation, 40. And nursing and rehab, 3. Source of exposure on Monday, community transmission, 583. Contact to a known case, 587. Travel related, 199. Under investigation, 44. Are unable to locate or refused at 9. Local opinion. Local religious private schools have freedom to decide on reopening. Thank you to Attorney General Ken Paxton for his guidance letter stating that the state's religious private schools need not comply with local public health orders, like the one that barred in-person instruction in Dallas County until after Labor Day. As protected by the First Amendment and Texas law, religious private schools may continue to determine when it is safe for their communities to resume in-person instruction, free from any government mandate or interference. Religious private schools, therefore, need not comply with local public health orders. As reported recently in the Dallas Morning News, governmental jurisdictions in Dallas County, Travis County, El Paso, San Antonio, and Laredo are among those that have issued orders stating instruction should begin in a virtual-only format. Last week in Dallas County, a judge offered an order that called for all schools, public and private, to be online only through September 7th. The Morning News report continues to state that because Governor Greg Abbott's executive orders addressing COVID-19 explicitly prohibited local governments from closing religious institutions or requiring specific mitigation strategies from them, local governments are similarly prohibited from issuing blanket orders closing religious private schools, said Paxton. Midland is home to more religious private schools per capita than just anywhere else in the state. And while it would be hard to comprehend the Midland County judge from duplicating an order similar to the one in Dallas County, it's good to know that schools such as Midland Christian, Trinity School of Midland, Midland Classical Academy, and St. Anne's Catholic School would be protected. My expectation is that Midlanders who choose to send their children to religious private schools have confidence that school leaders will make the correct decisions about when to begin in-person instruction, and they will put in their own safety measures, and they will provide online alternatives for those who are interested. In a recent report from the Houston Chronicle, Laura Colangelo, executive director of Texas Private Schools Association, said the group was grateful to Abbott for recognizing the independence and autonomy of religious private schools in Texas. Private schools need to be flexible and responsive to their students, staff, and communities, and this ruling allows that to happen. As always, the health, safety, and education of students in Texas is our highest priority. One last thing. Paxton's ruling doesn't provide improper preference for a certain group of people, but protects the liberties of all residents in our state. I would remind our readers that private school leaders, like their counterparts at Midland ISD, certainly have an interest in the growth of the entire student and are not going to allow their students or the greater population to be put in danger. They should have the freedom to make decisions, such as when it is appropriate to congregate. Thanks to Attorney General Paxton, they know they have that ability. Editor Stuart Doreen provided this opinion. These are the obituaries and death notices for Tuesday, July 21st, 2020. Arvel Russell Bohannon was born February 8th, 1926 in Oklahoma. He married Sherelle Prowser on June 12th, 1958 and worked for ExxonMobil for 30 years. AR is survived by his stepson, Bill Kahn of Phoenix, Arizona, and three nieces, Connie Camacho, husband Mo, Kay Mayberry, husband Rob, and Deborah Lukesh, husband John, and also his two nephews, Dale Bohannon and wife Lisa, and Terry Bohannon. In lieu of flowers, donations in his memory may be made to the Midland Soup Kitchen at 1401 Orchard Lane, Midland, Texas, 79701. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Eugenio Moreno Villa, 46, of Midland, passed away July 17th. Eugenio was born on February 27th, 1974. He is survived by his parents, Eugenio and Manuela Villa, sisters Francisca Carrasco, Maribel Almaguer, Socorro Villa, Inadelia Nguyen, brothers Hector Villa Moreno, Esteban Villa Moreno, Jesus Villa Moreno, Manuel Villa Moreno, and Jorge Villa Moreno. Visitations were held Sunday, July 19th and Monday, July 20th at the Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home, with the Holy Rosary being recited at 7 p.m. A funeral mass will be held Tuesday, July 21st, 2020, at Our Lady Guadalupe Shrine at 10 a.m., with the burial to follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas. George Weldon Snap of Midland went to be with the Lord on July 17th, 2020. Services will be Wednesday, July 22nd, 1 p.m. at First Baptist Church Chapel, Midland, with Dr. Darren Wood officiating. Burial will be at Sunset Memorial Gardens in Odessa with Masonic graveside rites. George was born on March 27th, 1932 in Fisher County. He is preceded in death by his parents, one son, Jimmy, daughter-in-law, Beth, and wife, Jimmy, two sisters and two brothers. He is survived by his wife, Joyce of Midland, son David and wife Derry of Odessa, two daughters, Karen Phillips and husband Ricky of Fort Worth, Annette DeStasi and husband Gus of Carrollton, four grandsons and three granddaughters, Josh Snap, Chris Snap, Jeremy Snap, Logan Doris, Lindsay, Ben Gogiare, Lacey Bryant, Jessica Clark, and 13 great-grandchildren. He's also survived by three stepdaughters, Vicki Parker and husband Scott of Big Lake, Terry Gardner and husband Rick of Blanchard, Oklahoma, Demetra Johns and husband Lonnie of Pontotoc, Texas, one stepson, Lee Daggett, and wife Revis of Fort Stockton. And also surviving George is one brother, Benny Snap of Brownwood. In lieu of flowers, please consider donations to Heart of Texas Baptist Camp, 8025 FM2125 in Brownwood, Texas, at 76801. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. Condolences can be made at npwelch.com. Kyle Kent Brooks, 61, of Midland, passed away at his home on Monday, July 13th. Kyle was born in Childress, Texas. He is survived by his two daughters, Amanda Dial and her husband, Jason Dial, Alicia Tyler and her husband, John Tyler, and his five grandchildren, Gage, Bryson, Mason, Brantley, and Harley. He is preceded in death by his father and mother, Kelly and Sue Brooks. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Condolences can be made at npwelch.com. Death notices. Elida Olivas Rodriguez. Elida Olivas Rodriguez, 73, of Midland, passed away July 17th. The viewing will be held on Tuesday, July 21st, at 12 to 8 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home, with a rosary being recited at 7 p.m. Chapel service will be held Wednesday, July 22nd, at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel at 10 a.m., with burial to follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. She is survived by her daughter, Reina Barriga, sons Ruben Rodriguez, Saul Rodriguez, Natividad Rodriguez, and Jose Guadalupe Rodriguez. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Gregorio Prieto, 76, of Midland, passed away on Sunday, July 19th. He was born May 9th, 1944, in Chihuahua, Mexico. A funeral service will be held on Tuesday, July 21st, at 10 a.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Burial will immediately follow at American Heritage Cemetery. Hobart Boomer. Hobart Boomer, 96, of Midland, passed away July 19th. No service is scheduled with Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. Survivors include one son, Robert Boomer. Jose Chavez, 69, of Midland, passed away July 19th. Viewing will be from 1 to 9 p.m. Tuesday, July 21st, and from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Wednesday, July 22nd, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral services will be held at 2 p.m. on Thursday, July 23rd, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Chapel in Midland, with interment following at Serenity Memorial Gardens and Cemetery. Ricardo Guadalupe Robles passed away in Midland on July 17, 2020. The viewing will be held on Tuesday, July 21st, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. A prayer service will be Tuesday, July 21st, at 7 p.m. Also at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel, graveside services will be Wednesday, July 22nd, at 2 p.m. at Serenity Memorial Gardens. He is survived by his wife, Andrea Robles, 5 sons, Joe Robles, Richard Robles, Manuel Robles, Roland Robles, and Ricky Robles, and 5 daughters, Manuela Rios, Rosie Robles, Linda Apontes, Sarah Robles, and April Robles. Robert Dale McKinney, 58, of Midland, passed away July 18th. The family will hold a service at a later date. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch. npwelch.com. Shirley Ann Clutter. Shirley Ann Clutter, 83, of Midland, passed away on Friday, July 17th in Odessa. Private family services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home.
Hello. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, July 21st, 2020. Front page. Presidential visit. Trump en route to Odessa. Odessa's Salisbury family helped secure presidential event. By Bob Campbell. B-C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L at OAOA.com. President Donald J. Trump will visit Odessa on July 29th. To raise money for his re-election campaign and to see the Permian Basin, which a Washington spokesman said Monday is on the front line for American independence. The vice president went there last year, and the first thing he did was call the president and tell him all about it, said Republican National Committee co-chairman Thomas O. Tommy Hicks, Jr., referring to Vice President Mike Pence. The president said, "I can't wait to go see this in person. The basin keeps us safe and keeps gasoline prices down. The future of the energy industry is one of the most important in this election." Hicks, a Dallas native and the 41-year-old son of former Texas Rangers owner Tom Hicks, Sr., said he has been to the basin many times and will attend the private luncheon, the site of which has not been formally disclosed. "I'm looking forward to it because the people of Odessa and Midland are some of the most patriotic people who love our country," he said. Asked how big of a crowd he expected, he said a number was hard to predict because social distancing would be practiced in deference to the COVID-19 pandemic. Invitations sent to prospective supporters here by the Trump-Pence Victory Committee show tickets to the Permian Basin special event with Donald J. Trump, President of the United States, are $2,500 for the luncheon, $50,000 for a couple's photo with Trump, and $100,000 to participate in a roundtable discussion with him. "This is the most important presidential election of our lifetime," Hicks said via phone Monday. "This president is behind the energy business, but presumptive Democratic nominee Joe Biden has embraced the Green New Deal, which would be devastating for our country and cause high gas prices." Co-sponsored by U.S. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York and U.S. Senator Edward Markey of Massachusetts, both Democrats, the GND is, quote, "a detailed national industrial economic mobilization plan to make the U.S. economy carbon neutral while promoting economic and environmental justice and equality, end quote, according to language in the proposed legislation. Hicks said Odessa's Salisbury family, particularly Salisbury Industries Executive Vice President C.R. Bubba Salisbury Jr., has been the prime mover in arranging the event. We have a lot of friends in Odessa and Midland who understand how important another 4 years of President Trump is for the American people, he said. The basin's takeaway capacity is very important. President Trump has relaxed a lot of regulations to help us build pipelines across the country. Texas political observers noted the relatively large number of Democrats, 955,735, who voted in the July 14th U.S. Senate runoff between former Air Force pilot M.J. Hagar and State Senator Royce West, with Hagar winning the nomination to oppose incumbent Republican Senator John Cornyn in the November 3rd general election. But Hicks said there is no chance of Texas's turning blue or being controlled by the Democratic Party. It's a pipe dream for the Democrats to think they can take Texas, he said. They've been talking about it for 15 years. The RNC co-chairman, a close friend and frequent hunting companion of Donald Trump Jr.'s, said the Trump campaign is thriving, having raised $14 million on the president's June 14th birthday. People can't vote yet, but what they can do is write checks, he said. There had never been so many small dollar donors with an average of $46 per donor. We have a grassroots army of 1.5 million people and a field staff of 1,500, more than twice Biden's 600, and a $200 million cash advantage. We don't see how he can catch up. Hicks said Biden, quote, is better off hiding his face, end quote, rather than holding big traditional campaign rallies around the country. But Trump, quote, wants to talk directly to the American people and will do so as often as possible. But we have to be safe, end quote, he said. Quote, the president's press conference and rally 2 weeks ago in Tulsa had 20 million viewers on TV, end quote. Hicks said he got involved with the RNC and the Trump campaign because he had been intensely interested in the 2016 race against Democrat Hillary Clinton and then realized that this year's election, quote, would be even more important than the last. Washington has taken so much control from the people and we need to give it back to them, end quote, he said. The RNC chair is Ronna Romney McDaniel of Northfold, Michigan, niece of U.S. Senator Mitt Romney of Utah. Doctor, Vaccine Will Take Time by Michael Merlo, M-M-E-R-L-O at OAOA.com. Odessa Regional Medical Center Hospital Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohit Sarvanan spoke about COVID-19 vaccines that are trialing during a Monday hospital briefing. Sarvanan spoke about a study detailing promising trial results regarding an experimental COVID-19 vaccine by Oxford University and AstraZeneca. They are still in phase one, he said. There are is at least three phases. When we go to phase three is when we're towards the end of releasing the efficacy data for a vaccine, he said. He said it would be several months before that data would be released. He added that production would also be an issue, and the manufacturers are looking to ramp up if the vaccine becomes positive. Even if this first vaccine that they are talking about, showing some favorable results, starts to bear fruit, it'll take at least 5 to 6 months in order to get that first vaccine out for people to use, and that's the earliest possibility, he said, adding that if a vaccine were to come out, he thought it would be released earlier next year. He also said that when news comes out regarding positive results, it doesn't mean that a vaccine is, quote, coming out tomorrow, end quote. ORMC President Stacey Brown said that out of 1,441 tests, 278 people have tested positive. 16 COVID-19 patients are in the hospital, 9 are on ventilators, and 7 tests are pending. Brown also reported that one Ettrick County resident died over the weekend at ORMC from COVID-19-related complications. Medical Center Hospital detailed in a press release that out of 850 positive cases, 36 COVID-19 patients are in the hospital. The patients reportedly include 1 from Permian Basin Community Center, 5 from Siena Nursing and Rehabilitation, 4 from Andrews, 2 from Fort Stockton, and 1 from Stanton. 13 patients are on the 7th floor, and 13 are on the 8th floor. 8 are in the critical care unit, and 5 of them are on ventilators. 2 patients are in the labor and delivery unit. MCH expected 5 discharges from the hospital from 7th and 8th floor, and 2 CCU patients to be transferred to isolation units later on Monday. No persons under investigation are in the hospital, and 339 tests are pending. The Ector County Health Department did not report their numbers by the 3 p.m. briefing time, but around 5:30 p.m., their website was updated. The ECHD website detailed 2,403 total positive cases in the county, with 1,643 confirmed positive and 760 probable positive. 1,028 cases are listed as active, and 1,342 patients have reportedly recovered from the virus. 33 Ector County residents have reportedly died from COVID-19-related complications. 762 tests are pending, and 51 people are reportedly hospitalized with coronavirus. Odessa Mayor David Turner updated the public, saying that Governor Greg Abbott would not be shutting communities down. Dr. Timothy Benton said that it's too early to project, but that, quote, the curve has flattened off a little bit the last few days. The slope of the graph is not going up, it's flattened, but it hasn't trended back down completely, end quote. He added that the number of new cases is down some, and it was good to hear that the census of local hospitals was coming down a little bit. I don't want us to let down our caution, let down our guard. Absolutely got to keep up the masks and watch for our social distancing and things to keep the spread down, he said. Highest unemployment in state. MMERLO at OAOA.com by Michael Merlo. The Texas Workforce Commission showed that Odessa had the highest unemployment in the state for the month of June. Having the highest unemployment in the state's not a place where you want to be, Odessa Mayor David Turner said in a phone interview. Turner said lowering that rate is a hard thing to do, with certain businesses remaining at 50% occupancy, along with the hits to the oil and gas industry. While in June of 2019, Odessa had an unemployment rate of 2.7%, that number has risen to 13% in 2020 during the coronavirus pandemic. CEO of the Permian Basin Workforce Board, Willie Taylor, said that Odessa had a 16.5% unemployment rate in May 2020, with a civilian population around 85,000, and for the month of June, that number dropped to 13% as the civilian population rose to 86,000. Quote, the oil and gas industry is still the number one driver of our economy, but we lost jobs in that area, end quote, he said, adding that while leisure and hospitality jobs increased all over the state, Odessa lost around 200 other industry positions. Taylor said that while Odessa's unemployment is comparable across the state, quote, Texas is about a 8.9 unemployment rate itself, end quote. While the TWC is still receiving steady calls regarding unemployment benefits, Taylor said he is waiting to see if calls will increase after CARES Act funding for unemployment benefits drops off after this week. Taylor predicted that calls would increase if people didn't get that extra $600 a week in CARES Act unemployment benefits. He said that he encouraged people receiving unemployment benefits to look for opportunities to upgrade their skills and said that they have offered job fairs to respond to the high unemployment rate. We're setting up some virtual job fairs on our platform. We've probably had 3 or 4 job fairs already, he said, adding that there has been real growth in other local industries. What it tells you is we need to continue to look at ways to diversify our economy, with oil and gas being 30 or 20% of our industry. It hit us pretty hard in the region, he said. More information on the Texas unemployment rate can be located at https://tinurl.com/y4ebob79. Board to review process to fill Woodall's vacancy. OA News at OAOA.com. The Ector County ISD Board of Trustees will review a process to appoint someone to fill Board Position 4 vacated by Doyle Woodall in June. During their July 14th meeting, trustees voted 6-0 to appoint someone to fill the spot. During their discussion, board members expressed a desire to take applications from those who are interested in representing Position 4. Administrators were going to design a process that the board will review during their 6 p.m. meeting today. The meeting will be held in the first floor boardroom of the administration building, 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. Everyone is required to stop at the front desk, have their temperature taken, and answer screening questions prior to accessing the building. Visitors are required to wear a mask. The meeting also will include discussion of ECISD's opening plans. The agenda says Superintendent Scott Murray will provide an update. ECISD Communications Officer Mike Adkins said in a text Monday that the plan is still a work in progress as TEA issued more guidance Friday morning. The expected school start date was August 12th. Last week, Murray said the likelihood of opening with students and opening with as many students as they would want in school buildings seems to be fading. Our community has heard me say, and I will continue to say, that we, to some degree, control our own destiny. The healthier we are as a community, the more likely it is that we can serve kids in our buildings, and we have to make sure that we're doing everything we can as a community, washing hands and wearing masks and social distancing. We've got to take care of ourselves and take care of the people around us, Murray said in a July 13th phone interview. And one reason to do that is so that our kids can go back to school. The week of July 6th, the Texas Education Agency released public health planning guidance for the 2020-21 academic year in order to well prepare students, teachers, and staff to safely return to school campuses for daily in-person instruction. In a news release last week, TEA said in response to the varying public health realities of each Texas community, these changes give the needed flexibility for schools to effectively provide a smooth transition for students, teachers, and staff so that they will experience the safest and least disruptive mode of learning during the beginning of the school year. School systems will now be able to temporarily limit access to on-campus instruction for the first 4 weeks of school. After the first 4 weeks, a school system can continue to limit access to on-campus instruction for an additional 4 weeks, if needed, with a board-approved waiver request to TEA. Several items over $50,000 will be up for board approval today. They can be found at https://meetings.boardbook.org/public/agenda/1406?meeting=323233. Trustees also will hear a report and recommendations from the Equity Task Force from the Executive Directors of Leadership. On the net, tinyurl.com/y6chbrjk. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 2,403. Ector County negative, 10,187 out of 13,352 tested, with 762 pending. 33 deaths. Recovered, 1,342. Active, 1,028. Midland County, 1,522 confirmed cases with 28 deaths. Texas, 332,434 confirmed with 3,269,897 tested. Total Texas deaths, 4,020. U.S. cases, 3,761,362 total confirmed and 140,157 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/tztrjlf. Quick hits. Training. Discover Odessa has scheduled a Odessa-friendly free training event from 1 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. Tuesday or from 8:30 a.m. to noon Thursday at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North Farm Road, 1788, Midland. Precaution measures will take place to keep attendees safe, which includes staggered seating, temperature checks at the door, sanitizer stations, and masks will be provided but not required. To RSVP, call 333-7871 or email Carmen, C-A-R-M-E-N, at discoverodessa.org. Visit discoverodessa.org. Digital short series begin. Basin PBS launch of a new kids digital short series that centers around local author Adrian Vega and his books and character, El Superlector. XTO Energy is the sponsor of this 8-part series, once a month, that will hit the station's Facebook and YouTube platforms beginning at 10 a.m. Thursday. Parents who sign their children up for the Basin PBS Kids Club membership will receive a copy of the original El Superlector book, as well as an El Superlector Super Reader t-shirt. In addition, Basin PBS will ask parents to share the name of their child's favorite books in the comments of the series, or by tagging at Basin PBS and using the hashtag ELSUPERLECTOR READS. That's hashtag El Superlector Reads. visit basinpbs.org. From Staff Reports.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.